Hi, I'm Peter Peck, and I'm host of the Players Podcast. Welcome to show two of our series, Race and the Soccer Player. On show one, we covered a lot of ground where we talked about the black experience in America today, as well as taking a look back at the journey that black Americans have had in the United States. In show two, we're actually going to dive into the soccer world where we look at this issue of racism and racial injustice through the lens of soccer, as well as have some thoughts offered to us by players Kai Kamara and Kellen Acosta. And then all of us, including our historian, Norton Herbst, will offer some thoughts on a way forward. So thanks for listening and enjoy.
The Players Podcast is dedicated to soccer players. Our goal is to provide discussion which stimulates the minds of players and serves as another opportunity to learn about the game and how to play the game. We'll explore a wide range of topics with some of the best coaches and the most interesting people in soccer today, with the goal of helping players enjoy their journey in the game.
Let's turn our focus now to the soccer world. And if we believe that the worlds that we live in, the kind of the interests that we have in our lives, that that's a microcosm of society as a whole, I think we can use the world of soccer to analyze this question and assess this question through the lens of soccer. And so let's talk about that, you know, racism in soccer. And I'm just going to offer you a few anecdotes to kick things off here. And so, you know, one is hearing Danny Rose say, "I can't wait for my career to end," just based on the personal racism that he's experienced, both, you know, playing for his club and also playing for his country as an English international. You know, Romelu Lukaku, of African descent, Belgian international, playing in Italy, very famous in the last 12 months or so. You know, he goes to take a penalty and he is met with chants of racism. And not only did it stop there, but the groups who organized those, they actually responded to him by saying, you know, that's not racism. There's real racism across Northern Europe. You should view it as a sign of respect. And so, you know, that's the mentality of the people who are maybe on the other side of this. England, Bulgaria, everyone remembers that. Just the, you know, the game had to be stopped multiple times because of racist chants, Nazi salutes. And then, you know, lastly, Raheem Sterling, who, you know, by a lot of people, and myself included, you know, give him great credit because, to your point that you've made, you know, Norton, one person can't do all this. There are certain things that every person can do, but, you know, he went out there on a limb and took a stand and was very strident in his views that this is not okay. And so, you know, those are just a few, just very brief snapshots, and that's a conversation that could go on forever as well because, you know, soccer, the most popular sport in the world. As a sport, we are definitely not immune to our history of having this present in our game. And so, you know, with that, I want to ask Kai and Kellen, what personal experiences you've had as from a soccer standpoint with racism?
Yeah, me, obviously being around and playing in different places, you try not to really focus on it. I've tried not to focus on it, whether I feel it from maybe opposing players. But actually playing for Houston, and we played in the CONCACAF once, CONCACAF Champions League, is where we play against teams from, you know, Mexico and just around South America and stuff. So, and being around there and being on the field in El Salvador and, you know, getting the monkey chants, like, you know, I feel like, okay, you're just trying to take me out of my game, you know, and it's not fair, for sure it's not fair, but I don't know, you know, I was able to power myself to stay focused and stay on the field and not really focus on it. But I do see it. I see all those guys around in Europe and how they can't take it. You know, they walk off the field, they cry in those things. But, you know, I look at it, some people say they want to just use it to get in your head, but it's unfair. It's unfair. It's an unfair stuff because I'm going out there working hard and hard. It's already hard enough to be, you know, black and get the opportunity to be on some teams that you play for, you know, because the chances is just like in the workplace, the chances that most people are getting is not, you know, all the same. And not only that, then to even have to worry about, okay, I'm going to go play this game, I'm going to get booed, or, you know, something's going to happen to me because I'm black. It's just unfair.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I experienced kind of the racism is more so when I'm playing for the national team, not necessarily playing domestically, usually internationally. I just remember playing like in CONCACAF Champions and playing in Mexico, people calling me certain words. I speak a little bit of Spanish, so translating it, I mean, it basically means the N word, and calling me that. And I just remember playing, I'm 12 years old and being called the N word in Spanish. And I'm just like, what's going on? Like, I'm a kid. You guys are acting, grown men acting like that towards me. Or playing in Europe, and it's the same way, playing in Italy and those different places. But I mean, it's alive and present, and it just, it sucks that people are acting this way. I mean, fortunately enough, I mean, in the States when I'm playing, I don't really hear chants like that, like Heisman Durant or Lukaku or Danny Alves getting thrown a banana. I haven't really experienced stuff like that. So, I mean, it's saddening and frustrating and super disappointing hearing those stories that people have experienced in the past.
Kellen, your story about being called the N-word in Spanish, and you mentioned that that was from an adult. Did that come from someone who wasn't a player, but like a coach or an adult on the sidelines? Is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm saying it was an adult fan, almost like a chant, like in unison.
Okay.
Like
it, from fans.
Seems like it's been, yeah, from fans. Like it's been practiced. Like, so we were playing, is it a U-17 World Cup? I'm not 12, I'm 14. And we're playing in Mexico. And we're not even playing against Mexico. It was just, there was Mexican fans there. And I just remember them specifically calling, because we have Mexican-Americans on our team, they're calling them traitors because they had to play for Mexico. And then they were calling me the N-word in Spanish in unison. And it was almost like a chant, like it was rehearsed and practiced. And it didn't seem like it was the first time it's been said. And I'm 14, I'm confused, and I'm just trying to focus on the game. And in the back of my head, I'm hearing this. I'm getting whistles and boos, and they're not even supporting either team. So it was just actually pretty incredible that people can go out their way just to be racist. Like it's pretty remarkable, to say the least.
For both of you, does it feel different, and in no way acceptable, but maybe in a professional way, does it feel different if it's coming from a player on the other team who, to your point, Kai, may be just doing it to try and get in your head, gamesmanship, gain an advantage, take you out of your game, versus when it comes from fans or any other group that's not a professional peer on the other side of the sideline from you? Is there a difference in your mind or in your heart, rather, or no?
No, racism is racism. It should not be accepted either way. But again, when it comes on the field with someone that wants to talk back, maybe you do feel a little bit of like, really, like you trying to get in my head, you know. I've confronted a couple of players with that. We've bumped heads and I actually wanted to fight them at the end of the game, not when the game was going on, because I said, fine, you're doing what you're doing. When the game's done, then, you know, so we had a big commotion a couple times when it did happen. But when it comes from the fans, as Kellen said to me, you know, or when I was in, played a game in El Salvador, it's practice. And if that's practice, so what are you thinking, you know? I mean, yes, you could say the same thing for the players, like coming into this game saying, oh, this is what I'm going to say to Kai. But if you can repeat those things over and over and you're comfortable with saying it out loud with the fans, it's more powerful because you're saying it out loud and freely. You're not mumbling it like a player could be mumbling it next to me. You're saying it out loud and freely and not even worried about the other thousands that's in that stadium that's going to, you know, take action to it. So, yes, it hurts when it comes, you know, from numbers, but racism is racism, even if it comes from one individual.
Yeah, I mean, like Kai said, I mean, racism is racism. But, it kind of hits a little bit harder when it's in a professional environment, especially playing against someone and you're looking around and you're looking at their team and you're like, well, you have teammates that look exactly like me. And so it kind of just gets you questioning, like, how they view them, how the relationship in the locker room, and is that instilled in them? Is there others on this team that are like that way? And, I mean, it's a little bit heartbreaking, but at the end of the day, it's like, I feel bad in the sense that it's racism, but I'm also feeling like I one-up them because they feel so threatened by my play or about who I am that they think they can bring me down by some words. And although it must hurt, by the end of the day, I'm like, he must be hurting more than I am, because if he can go out his way to say those things to try to get under my skin, then he's obviously enduring a lot more than I am. And so, and that is a small victory in my head. And I mean, others might not take it that way, but that's kind of my viewpoint on it.
Thank you. Kai, I heard you share a story once somewhere about fan engagement type of event in Columbus early in your career, if you can share that with us.
Yeah, I think that was the first time actually I felt different. I moved to the U.S. at 16. I was really adopted by, you know, white families, because I played soccer in Manhattan Beach for Manhattan Beach Hurricanes, and Coach Bruce Myrie and the team manager, Tim Bradford, will spend all their times with their kids, come over my house and pick me up every day, because I was just, you know, with my mom, single parent. My mom had to work, and they picked me up. They took me to games, spent so much time with them and their kids, and I never looked at it any other way. I just wanted to play soccer. And even in college, again, I would go to Cal State Dominguez Hills. That's, you know, just in Compton. So it's very diverse, you know, it's Spanish, black, you know, white people and Asians and everyone. But then now I got drafted professionally as a young boy, 21, and really excited. And there's a fan engagement. And I'm like thinking, you know, I can sweet talk anyone. You know, I feel comfortable walking around this room. Yeah. Kellen knows my personality. And so I'm going, you know, table after table, talking to people, and I reach a table and I said, hello. And, you know, but the parents were looking really far from me. And I thought they just didn't see me. I was like, oh, hi, how are you guys doing? And I extend my arm out, but I got nothing, you know, still blank. And there was a young boy, he's maybe about eight, maybe between 8 to 10. So I did the same thing to the young boy. I wanted to shake his hand. So I was like, what's up, bud? And he looks to his mom and looks to dad, and they looked away, and he puts his head down, puts his arm away, and looks away. And now here I am standing there just sweating, and I can't leave the table because it's one of those speed dating thing where you meet one table. And I'm young too. I'm just like, you know, with my ignorance again, I go, oh, I'm Kai Kamar. I was born in Sierra Leone, West Africa. I started talking about Africa and all these things. And not once was there a connection where they looked at me or acknowledged that I was even there. And that was the first time. And I walked away. I go, somebody did tell me where they were from, which I never even knew. That's why I say to Norman again, saying I'm learning the history of America. Still, it's like they're from, you know, Toledo, Ohio. It's really, you know, racist over there. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know that. I was just coming here thinking, with soccer, we get to meet so many different people. So that was my first ever experience in 2006, actually, it was.
No, that was very powerful hearing that. I mean, you know, 2006 just feels like yesterday. And so to hear you share that experience.
You can't say that when Kellen's in the room.
Well,
you were in middle school, weren't you?
Shoot, I don't even know. I was, yeah, middle school probably.
For most of
11
us.
11 years old.
Yeah. So, you know, as professional players in a domestic league, you guys recently got together and created an organization, Black Players Coalition. And Kai, I know you do some work with that. I'm just going to read what the kind of the mission statement or some words about the organization.
We're now called Black Players for Change.
Okay, Black Players for Change. We'll address the racial inequalities in our league, stand with all those fighting racism in the world of soccer, and positively impact Black communities across the United States and Canada. Tell us how that's going.
Yeah, it's going. It's going well. Again, it's a surprise, really, after all these things happening in America, all these shootings and stuff, for one or two guys, and to be in an Instagram conversation, actually, where they started adding all the other Black players in the league into this Instagram group of conversations, and us trying to say, what are we going to do together? And again, with, you know, George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery, and now, obviously, Breonna Taylor, and all these things happening. So it just started with just a conversation between a few of us in the Instagram group, to then setting up a Zoom call where, you know, I think it was maybe 70 to 100, you know, players, Black players around the league jumped onto this Zoom call, and we're all just sharing information and talking and feeling so affected by most of this. And everybody had stories to tell, you know, most common story, I can't say common to you, because maybe you might not understand, but to say me and my wife were in the car, and my wife is white, where, you know, a encounter with the police coming over and asking my wife if she was okay. You know, one or two players shared the same story. And I was walking with my wife, and then we got stopped, and then the police asked my wife if my wife was okay, because, you know, again, the wife being white. So these kind of things, and we started to just find a way to put, you know, this group together, and thought, maybe we need to have a union of, you know, Black players in this league, so we can, you know, not just talk about the racism that goes outside, you know, in America in general, because that's a really big topic and we can be able to tackle that. But how about if we're able to make a change within our profession, just soccer in America, just MLS, you know, if we are able to do something like that, because we don't see many Black coaches. We see a lot of Black players. You know, the league has so many Black players, you know, from different cultures. It can be Spanish, and then Africans, or, you know, African Americans that, you know, that was born here. And so now it's, what are these opportunities that's been given to some of these, you know, Black people, even in office positions, not just the coaches, but the general managers, you know, people in the front office that's, you know, ticket sales and all that. We don't feel that connection so much with, you know, more Black people getting the opportunity, because it's different. Which, you know, the teams have admitted that, yeah, we see that, and it's true. Because if somebody hires you, Peter, and the next minute, you know, who's your closest friend? You're gonna call your closest friend. Maybe most of the time he's not gonna be Black, and that's the person you're gonna bring into that position. So that's how the positions keep growing. With, you know, the athletes are there that are Black, but the people that's running the organizations, you know, GMs or coaches, are not Black, and most of them are not getting the chance. So we're working through that, to trying to bridge that gap, get that equality in somehow, and give, you know, more Black people a chance in these workplaces. And Black Players for Change, again, now it's growing, it's getting bigger, even partnering with the Players Coalition, which is with the NFL, and what they've done, you know, with the police reform, and they're fighting the injustice system that's going on. So partnering with them too, we feel very powerful. We're working with the NBA, and also what they're doing too, you know, to try to take a stance of what's going on. So together now, it's not just us, you know, but it's, you know, Black athletes in America. It's kind of where it's, you know, hopefully it's going to be, because we have a better opportunity to make it something bigger than just thinking about us. But that's the bigger part. But for us inside MLS, is to really bridge that gap, so we can have you know, some fair treatment to, you know, some black people that want to be in positions for different clubs in the league.
No, that's great. And just so glad you guys are doing that, and all the best and best of luck with that. As two, you know, very accomplished, very successful players in not just the league, but, you know, guys that have been internationals, represented your countries, what would you say to black youth soccer players and black youth in general? And Kellen, if you don't mind starting with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an open question, I guess. I mean, from my standpoint and what I've endured, I mean, it's all about character, hard work, perception, be respectful. And yeah, I mean, I think oftentimes are that when you're black and when you go against the norm or you say certain things, you're acting out, and that's not the case. And I encourage people to be themselves, and so you can be accepted, but you need to be respectful. I think oftentimes we as black people, we get so frustrated that we aren't accepted, that we tend to do certain things and they get escalated. So for me, from what I've learned in my experience, is that put your head down and work as hard as you can. And if someone closes the door on you, there will be more doors that will be open. And that goes for the soccer world. That goes for life in general. And I just encourage the black youth that there's more to life than just kicking a ball or shooting a ball or being a music artist. I encourage the future generations to be more. I want to see more doctors. I want to see more lawyers. I want to see more politicians. I want to see black people in higher positions of authorities that make those tough decisions. And I think, obviously, I've already experienced enough in my life, but I think it's for the future generations that it's crucial that they have other people to idolize and look up to. I mean, it's easy to look at the LeBrons and those type of guys, but sometimes we need more the MLK, the Obama, the John Lewis's, like those types of guys. And so from my standpoint, is be yourself and don't be scared of what society wants you to be. I think you should pave your own way and just ride your own wave and be free flowing and continue to pursue your dreams.
Yeah, it's hard for me to add to that, Peter. That's well said. And you know, man, to me, it's the one where I talked about, or where you asked a question about our kids. You know, what do we tell them? How do we want to teach our son? And it's, to me, that's where it comes from. Again, yes, it's soccer. You're a young soccer player, but it's the upbringing of individuals, the upbringing of not the black players on the teams, but the players of other races on the teams, you know, to be able to accept one another, upbringing from your house, your neighborhood. And because with that, then we're accepting each other well, instead of a black player coming onto a team and feeling different, you know. But again, hopefully this change does come, and this change is coming, so that most of these kids that don't really know what the difference is, you know, to be black or white or, you know, or brown or yellow or whatever it is, that they don't have to deal with that when they're a teen or even later, because they can look at it and say, oh, that's a part of history that everybody skipped. They didn't get to that part. You know, there was a part, there was a point that the John Lewis, the Martin Luther King, and all these people fought for that, came back around, and they skipped it, and they became, you know, equals of everybody else. And so the way my mom or, you know, these other kids of other races, moms, dads are bringing them up in their house, in their houses, in their neighborhood, and teaching them diversity and these things, and not really just trying to teach them about black people or white people, what's going on, but just the diversity, so you can be comfortable to, you know, call somebody your black friend, instead of, you know, oh my God, like you feel so uncomfortable just saying these things, that it's just so much easier, or just calling somebody, you know, my friend, you know, that's just my friend, you know. So all these things, it's just, to me, soccer is one thing, but if we're teaching our kids different, like the experience that I had with that one boy who was really young, but it's learning something different from his mom or dad, it's really hard. Then the other kids now at that age of, you know, 8 to 12 or whoever, what they learn from their house and from their school, from their neighborhood, that's what they're going to bring out to the field or with their friends. So hopefully, you know, these informations are passed well in the households, because it makes soccer and makes sports just easier, because sports is a diverse thing. It doesn't matter what sport it is, because people are going to play sports from, you know, it's an international language. So for me, that's the only thing I can add, is just from in-house, how we're teaching our kids, it's really going to make a difference to how they play. So whether you're going to be a black player, black youth that's coming up, hopefully the other players of different race are being, you know, lectured about diversity, and not just about black culture, just lecture about diversity, so they can be able to accept one another when they're part of these teams.
Thank you for that, Kai. And just to run with that for a second, Kellen, a question that gets asked to every single generation, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this. Do you believe that the prospects for your children going forward for opportunity, for achievement, for merit-based progress and success, do you believe that that opportunity for your children is better today than the opportunity that you had and the opportunity that your parents had?
I would say so, yes, because I think as each generation move on, the generation before kind of paves the way for the next generation. And so I think from my standpoint, it's crucial for me to pave the way for the next generation of black people. And I think the same thing goes with Kai. And so, I mean, that's the ultimate goal, is you want to create a legacy that people can look up to and to move forward with. And so I know that what my grandparents endured was so my mom and my aunts and all of them could have a better life. And it's just like a ladder effect, because it goes the same way for myself. Like, I endure certain things so my son can have a better life. And I think as we move on, and like I said before, I think as the generations are moving on, people are having different roles in their communities and stepping up. And I think that's definitely imperative. And that's, like I said, that's something to look up to. And it's important that kids, like future kids, not only can just be, like I've mentioned before, that aren't just artists or ball players, that they could be anything they want to be. And I think it's imperative for us to kind of just stress that fact for the next generation. And as we move on, more and more people will be in higher roles in the communities and society.
Great. Let's move forward now, and let's take a look at what we can do individually and collectively as a country to get the most out of this moment and impact change going forward. And Kai, why don't you start us off on that?
Yeah, I think to me, the biggest one is the vote. You know, I know, yes, we're out there on the streets and we're protesting, which I've been part of it. And I still look forward to, you know, being part of it to continue to make sure that, you know, yes, our voices are heard. And that's the other thing, is when black people speak, it just looks so, I guess, violent. You know, people just look at it and term it in a different way. You know, I could be having the same script given to me. They would tell me, say, you know, in anger, and I can describe that. And Norton, you can come in and do the same thing. And I bet you, if, you know, more people look at, like, whoa, he looked angry, you know, because the way we just express things are different. I am not for any looting and destroying properties and all these things. Definitely not. Again, that's one of the I keep bringing Sierra Leone, my country, into it. That's one of the worst thing that ever happened during the Civil War is we destroyed our own country, and then now we're still working to build the country again. So those things are not the things that you want to see happen to a city, to a state, or, you know, anywhere. You don't want people to destroy, but the vote, you know. I've been a citizen in America for how so long, and I've passed, you know, two elections, and I didn't vote because I looked at it. I said, listen, I'm a good person. I'm going to continue doing what I do. I go to neighborhoods, I make appearances, and I be good to my neighbors, and I do what I do. I just think politics is just so much of a business than actually, you know, what's going on. That's what I've always thought until now, going through this time in America, and people are educating us a little bit more to say, just like you just mentioned, Orton, about the history and, you know, the constitutions and how things are written. And obviously these things can be changed, but the only way it can be changed is through, you know, government. Yes, everybody has the right to vote for whoever you want to vote for. But to me, myself, being someone, being an American, that I haven't taken that opportunity even to say, okay, you know, I voted during, you know, Bill Clinton's days, or I voted for Obama, or I voted for Bush, or I voted whoever it is. I didn't do any of that. But I just know that this time around, the first time, I'm actually saying, yes, I am going to be one of the first people to do it. And I don't just want to keep posting on social media and saying, I support this. I want change. I want change. And then the people that says, okay, one of the ways that you can affect change is just to, you know, get a ballot and cast a vote. So that's also another protest that I'm going to do, is then, you know, I'm going to exercise that right that I have.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was going to say, like, I think we just need to ask the question, where do we have authority, power, or influence in our lives? And those are the, you know, I can't change systematic racism in America, and I can't change it. And like it's just too big. And it can be overwhelming to look at the issues, but there's places I have authority and influence in my family. So I can hopefully affect change on how my kids view the world. And I have some influence in the place I work, and I'm a teacher. So I teach other people. So I have influence there. So we all have influence in parts of our lives. And especially sports figures, you guys have a lot of influence. And so I think that's an important question we have to ask, is what are the areas where we have influence, and how can we channel that influence to make and inspire true change?
Yeah, those are all great points. You know, something I say a lot is, you can change the world by changing your backyard. And everything you just said, Norton, you know, your family, your place of work, those are very simple, obvious, but I think powerful places where we can all be doing those things to do our, not just do our share, but to, you know, authentically drive change. So there's a quote that I'm going to read again, well, a new quote, but it's one that I think really captures, as I think about both a way forward as well as some of my concerns about this moment. And my biggest concern is that when you see some of the activity that you see on TV, and if you follow any social media, it can be a dangerous place these days. But I think there's real opportunity for people to have the message get lost in images from groups that may not have the long-term, you know, movement of what I think this moment is really seeking, who may not be in the same place and who may have different agendas, political agendas. And so that's my biggest fear, is that, you know, the good that all of this time is trying to create can get drowned out by violence, and by things that turn people off. And I mean, listen, the 1960s, like those peaceful protests, they worked, and they changed. I think they helped change America, and in many ways changed the world. And so that's my biggest fear, is that, you know, people see violence and the message becomes diluted. It becomes in some homes DOA, and so it gets lost in that. And so there's one quote from a guy named Killer Mike. If you follow the entertainment world, the rap world, you probably know him. I grew up in Atlanta, and so I follow, you know, just the comings and goings back there. And so during just the, you know, early part of this moment and this movement, he was very outspoken, and I thought he provided some of the greatest words I've ever heard related to this. And so I'll just read them. We don't want to see targets burning. We want to see the system that sets up for systemic racism burn to the ground. It is your duty not to burn your house down for anger with an enemy. It is your duty to fortify your own house so that you may be a house of refuge in times of organization. And now is the time to plot, plan, strategize, organize, and mobilize. It is the time to beat up prosecutors you don't like at the voting booth. It is a time to hold mayoral offices accountable, chiefs and deputy chiefs. And so, you know, as I heard that, it really, really stuck a chord with me. And he's basically saying, like, these things that we want to do that will make us feel better just in the moment, like, that's actually going against us. We need to channel that energy, and we need to put it in ways that will lead to systemic change. And I thought they were some of both the wisest words as well as practical, but very, very powerful. And so that's, when I think about those two questions, that's something that comes to mind. So Norton, I know you've got some thoughts on this. What are some ways that we can move forward and get better as a country on this issue?
Wow, good question. Well, I think as Kai mentioned, we can vote. It's a place where we have power to vote for, and that, not just presidential elections. That's the election that gets all the coverage, but state level and local elections are hugely important. Those officials have power to shape legislation and policies and all sorts of things. And there are some really deep seated, very extremely complex issues when it comes to housing and the prison system and education, all of those kind of things that, getting involved and taking voting seriously, I think is something we can do. And then a lot of the things I think both Kai and Kellen have said on just, like an individual level, wherever, if it is sports for you or whatever your career is or wherever you have influence, it's standing up for more racial equality and trying to figure out what that looks like.
Yeah, for sure. We have vote, like you say, Norton. I never thought it would be so powerful, but it really is, you know? So I look forward to it. Doesn't matter what change it brings, but just to feel the fact that, you know, I made, you know, a step forward to what everybody's been talking about, you know, in unified fashion that we're going to do. It's going to be powerful.
Yeah.
Okay. And just to end up here, you know, Kai and Kellen, what thoughts would you offer the youth soccer community as a whole on this topic that is systemic? It is touches every part of our society. But if we're just talking here as a community of youth soccer, what thoughts would you offer us on this topic?
I'm not entirely sure. I mean, for me, soccer was an avenue to kind of escape the real world. And so for the youth, I mean, it's kind of hard trying to tell them what to do. Cause for me, I was just going out there to play, to have fun, to enjoy the bringing. Cause like I said before, sport brings communities together, and it has given me lifetime friends and has shown me the ropes of people of different communities, people of different societies, people of different cultures, and has helped me see that with my own eyes and helped welcome me. But I mean, I guess from my standpoint, I mean, in youth soccer, I mean, maybe it would be better just to see more, you know, black coaches involved and maybe have a coach that the kids that look like me could look up to and to learn from and to hear the different experiences they've been a part of. And I guess, I mean, overall, it's just to have conversations, just educate about this is the world, this is what we are, but in sport, we're all one, we're all one team, and our goal is to win, and we got to find a way to win. And I think with that mindset, I think hopefully that transitions into everyday life, that everyone can believe that we're all in one team, and we all want each other to win and to be successful. And, I mean, that's the whole aspect of team sports is unity. And if you kind of instill that into the youth, I think that will pay dividends for the future.
Now, thank you. I think you said a lot there, even though you might not think you did, but I think you said a lot. Kai, we'll let you have the last word.
He takes over from everything I want to say and just say it. I mean, it's great. It's amazing to be in this group with you guys. Again, what we're doing is trying to educate people, and we're not the best. Maybe we're not the best educator, but it's sharing our experiences. You know, I learned a lot about, you know, Kellen Acosta just being in here. I've been in the locker room with him more, but these are things we don't really talk about because obviously, you know, we're both black and we just look at each other and just, you know, move forward. Yes, we will see something on social media and say, oh man, did you see that? Oh yeah, it's sad, it's this, you know. We both have kids, boys, and you know, during game day, sometimes when our kids are able to come to the stadium, we talk about, oh yeah, they were playing together, those things. And to me, in youth soccer, again, as I mentioned earlier, it's the education, but that education that comes from home, you know, that we can translate onto the field when we do go out there. For sure, we want to see more black people get opportunities. I'm not saying, hey, go hire all the black people out there now to say this is what we're doing to, you know, end systemic racism. Obviously not, but, you know, to have these opportunities and people just, you know, not, if we can stop, you know, judging, you know, each other so much, because that's really what it is. We mentioned earlier about when I walk out of the house, how do I want to dress, you know, when I'm going to a place. I worry about all those things. It's just the same thing as people that has to apply for jobs. There's a opening at the Rapids Academy. About the black coach, I shouldn't be worried and try to look online and see how many black coaches they have part of the academy. You know, I should just send in my resume and just thinking, okay, I'm going to get a fair opportunity. It's not saying that's what happens over there, but these are some of the thoughts that goes through, you know, most of us and most of the other people's head that they share. And hopefully some of these things can be, you know, can be lessened so we don't have to worry about those things anymore. And, you know, with the coaches, yes, one or two of the black coaches that's going to get the opportunity out there to do it. Hopefully with them, they can, you know, pave the way. Like Kellen said earlier, we're paving the way for the other kids and, you know, for the next generation and the other generation. And they pave the way so that other people that's going to come behind too can get those opportunities. So, just education to me, education from home. It's the most powerful thing because the coaches and teachers can do it all. If you're in your household and the education or, you know, it's not really coming from there.
Great. Well, listen, gentlemen, thank you. We covered a lot in a short period of time, but it's been, you know, a fantastic conversation and just thanks for what you're doing out there, every single day. And, as we've said, you know, we can change the world by changing our backyard. And I trust that each of you men are doing exactly that. So thank you for your time.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you, guys.
Great. Norman, thank you so much for the education, too. I really, really appreciate that. Sure.
Thanks for listening to the second part of our series, Race and the Soccer Player. Thanks again to Kai Kamara, Kellen Acosta, and Norton Herbst for their contribution to this discussion. And as we leave, I want to offer a thought, really running with Kellen's idea of one generation paving the way for the next generation. And I don't think you have to be Christian Pulisic playing at Chelsea to pave the way for the next generation of American players. I think that this can be really an everyday concept where you could be from one school paving the way for kids from that school in whatever field you go to. It could be the nationality that you hail from. It could be a state that you come from going into a different part of the country or the field that you're in. I think this applies in everyday life. But I also think it's true that if you're a young person of color, that the impact that you have could be more powerful than for others. And so feel great about that, and hopefully you're excited about that, and hopefully everyone is excited about trying to do that for the next generation. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.